Welcome back to The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Mary Beth Maziarz. What do you get when the son of a pro wrestler grows up to transform how the world's top companies treat their people? Well, you get Lonnie Mane. Growing up watching his father, the legendary Moondog Mane, step out of the ring and connect with fans as a real human being left a lasting mark on Lonnie. He took that lesson into a 30-year career as a technology and turnaround executive, eventually serving as president of In Moment, where his team grew the company over 800%.
But Lonnie's real mission became something bigger, humanizing business. He's the founder and CEO of Red Shoes Living, a philosophy and a framework for leadership, culture, and human potential. He's also the author of the acclaimed book by the same name and the author of an upcoming book called Red Shoes Rising. He's worked with brands like Nike, Microsoft, and McDonald's. He's presented at the Palace of Westminster and delivered anti-bullying and suicide prevention talks to youth across the country.
And today he's here with us to talk about what it means to truly stand out for the positive in how you work and how you live. Lonnie Mane, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Oh, thank you both so much. It's a pleasure to be here and see both of you and be in this great environment studio that you have with all this great energy and dogs walking around.
We are not known as Bark City for no reason.
I got you. But we have, just really quick, we have a little 6-pound Yorkie, Enzo, and an 85-pound retriever, Ozzie. So Ozzie and Enzo. So we're dog lovers. So this has been great. So
nice. I love it.
It's great.
Well, let's start a little bit by just describing the origin story of Red Shoes Living. First of all, why Red Shoes?
Yeah, it's really kind of by chance. I was running a tech company as president, and I came from corporate America, went into the tech company, and my kids said, "Dad, you can't wear coat and tie anymore. You're not in corporate America. You're in the tech company. You're probably the oldest person in that tech company." And so they went out and they bought me a hoodie. A black t-shirt and some jeans and some red Van tennis shoes. And they're like, "This is what you're wearing." And I said, "I can't wear that." And so one day I put the outfit that they had bought me on. It was a little uncomfortable. And I went into the tech company and we were having a meeting with the small team that we had at the time. And I was talking about, look, we want to stand out for the positive in everything we do, from emails that we send to when people come into our office, how we greet them. You know, we want to be kind and respectful and understand their stories. And I started to walk through this, and our head of marketing at the time, is it kind of towards the end of the meeting, I said, "Does everybody understand that we're going to be different? We're going to stand out." And he said, "We're going to stand out." This was the head of marketing. "We're going to stand out just like those red shoes you have on stand out." And that became the symbol. A little bit of a curse, because now I have to wear red shoes a lot. And so that was kind of the genesis of that. And we took that little company from 14 people at the time. I had invested in the company. We took it to over 1,700 people in over 100 countries. And
wow. And
we use primarily what we're going to talk about today to compete, to differentiate ourselves, to be more human. And I'm still doing it today. And then companies, our clients, kept saying, "You guys are different. You stand out. And you return phone calls, you return emails, you write handwritten notes, like things that most people today don't do. You guys do it." So the company started calling me and saying, "Hey, can you come and talk at our conference?" And so that was kind of the genesis after, 12 years or so of running that company. I finally left and wrote a book about it. Now I do it all over the world. So, yeah.
And so you have a new book coming out, Red Shoes Rising.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what's new, what's added on to your message that made you know that you were ready to do a 2.0?
Yeah, so, during tough times, we were getting calls from companies that were going through change, had to furlough people or, readjust and everything, and they were asking us, "Can you help us get through these tough times? We have Red Shoes Living and the basis of that, but we'd also like you to come back and talk to us about what's next, what else can we think about?" And so one day I had a call with McDonald's, actually, and I was trying to think, how can I help them get through it? And at the time, my chief of staff, I was having a conversation with her, And I said, you know, when hard times happen or even opportunities come, what do we do? What are the things that we do? And we had this conversation, and I said, we kind of have to step into them, or we can step around them or step away from them. And back in the days of COVID, not to bring that up again, but nobody in the world had a choice. We were in it. So then we started saying, all right, what's the second thing that we do? And this is where the rise came from. We have to step through it. That's the hardest part. You know, and it could be anything. It could be a loss of a job. It could be a health issue. It could be an opportunity, a promotion. But we have to step through that as elegantly as we possibly can. And then the third thing was, eventually, you have to have hope that we're going to step up. So no matter what happens in the world today, adversity or an opportunity, Red Shoes Rising is about those three things. We're going to step in, we're going to step through it, and we're going to step up. And so that message has really resonated with companies around the world and people around the world, that whatever it is you're going through, you're going to get through it. We're going to step up. So that's the Red Shoes Rising book that'll be out in August.
So the fact, Lonnie, that you started out in corporate America, people don't necessarily equate corporate America and being very human. In fact, they might think the opposite. But somewhere along the way, you decided that it was your personal mission, I guess. And how did that develop, and how did you carry it through your world in corporate America?
Yeah, so it came from a couple of different places. You know, growing up, I had a family that, fortunately for me, my mother included, was just very human. In fact, just to give a shout out to my mother, recently she lost 3 sisters that she adored and loved in 3 consecutive months. And awful. Today, she is the same mother today that she was when I lost my father, you know, at 10 years old. And I bring that up only because she taught me how to rise, we go through tough times, and we have all the emotions that human beings are supposed to have, but she taught me to kind of move forward. You have to move on and move forward. You can grieve, of course, and go through those emotions, but at some point we have to continue to live and show up in the world in the most positive way. My father, the professional wrestler, He was a 6-time world champion. Andre the Giant used to stay at our house. Dwayne Johnson, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Dwayne Johnson's father and my father wrestled. So he Rowdy Roddy Piper, like, he's just had a deep history. And it wasn't the wrestling that I learned from my dad. So my mother's 5'1½". If I don't say a half, she's going to be mad at me. But, and my father was, you know, he was just barely 6 foot, but a big guy. And so I took more after my mother, so there was no future for me for wrestling. But my father taught me something that even, you know, by the time I was 10 and he passed away, when my mother would allow me to go to the wrestling matches, I watched how my father treated people. So even though he was this bigger-than-life person, the security guards knew him, he knew their children, they always smiled when they saw him, when he went into the locker room, you know, the doctors that were taping his ankles and doing all of those things, they all smiled. My dad was missing one tooth, by the way, and he kept it that way for character, I think, but it was the way he treated people. So he had this bigger-than-life persona, but he humanized those moments. So between my mother, my father, and even extended family, my grandmother was a huge influence on me. They just, you know, they wanted to humanize people. So no matter how big you get or how big your ego gets, if you can do that, you know, then you can learn about people. So that's really kind of the inception of all of this.
Yeah. Take heed, parents out there. You are the model for your children.
It's true.
And how you treat people in front of your children is so important.
Right.
Well, you know, in this day and age, one of the hopeful things that I think this message is getting through to people who are so worried about AI taking their jobs, that really, I mean, if you're optimistic about it, you look at it more as how jobs are going to transition, but there
right.
will be jobs. And it's going to be more important than ever, this concept of being human. Can you talk to that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, everything, if you think about technology in general, all of us through all the years, and even my mother and father, have had to adapt and utilize technology to the benefit, I believe, of humanness and how we show up in the world. And I know there's a lot of fear and insecurity and trepidation in the world today. And so we've been busier than we've ever been. And based on that, though, you know, you leverage the technology where it's appropriate, but there's always the bright side. And when I think about that, the opposite of that is, when's the last time you've received a handwritten note? You know, we have a young man that we're working with and is a friend of ours that received a handwritten note, somebody that works here in a restaurant in Park City, from a client of ours in Maryland that he's talked to. And he wrote a handwritten note, got his address, and we were meeting with this young man, and he was so thrilled that somebody took the time. The gift of time is the best gift you can give, to write that note, and he's proud of it, you know. And in return, we just got married, and so in return, you know, he sent us flowers. Like, those things. So even with technology and AI, I mean, you know, I'm sitting here in studio with both of you. We're not using AI right now. We're, you know, we're looking at each other's eyes. We're smiling. We're laughing. And so whenever technology rises, there's the flip side of that, that people, and so Red Shoes actually is, what are people not doing? You know, if they're just using technology, are you picking up the phone and calling somebody? Are you sending somebody an audio text? We have people that send audio texts to us. I just want you to hear my voice from London. So it's positive on both sides, but it's a super opportunity to increase the human factor. When technology rises, when we increase the human factor, and we teach companies this, it is Red Shoes Living and Red Shoes Rising all together.
I love that. There's a quote that you mentioned that I think was your grandmother's that is so wonderful, and it feels like it's become integrated into your message. The quote is, "Treat those that have more than you as equals, and those who have less as kings and queens," which is such a beautiful approach to all the people you may encounter in your day. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, so to that point, my grandmother would tell me that, you know, I grew up in a family of professional wrestlers and sports people, and so she was always concerned about our ego. And we all have an ego, and we want to put that out there when it's appropriate. But she also wanted us to understand that if you can pull your ego back and, again, humanize it. So she would tell us that quote weekly, if not daily. You know, just remember, you know, be human, be kind, be all of these things. And so that's really where the inception of that came from. And so there are leaders, the best leaders that I've worked with, Mary Beth, are humble.
Yeah,
they're strong and they're confident, you know. I mean, we've worked with a lot of them, but they're very humble, actually. And so she had taught that to me, and taught that to my father, obviously, you know. And then my father's brother, he was an executive, and I used to travel with him after my father passed away, and I would sit in board meetings with him and fly on his planes to meetings and everything. And he exemplified that very thing as well, you know.
Yeah.
And so when we got off base a little bit, I would get a call from my grandmother when she was still alive, and she would invite me over for dinner. It was like the last meal, almost. She would sit me down, and she would say, "I feel like you've lost sight of that. You know, your ego's a little puffed up. Bring it down a bit, you know, be confident, do hard work and everything, but just relate, connect with people." So that was really, yeah.
I used to play the piano at the River Horse Cafe for many years, and we would get a lot of celebrities that would come in, and inevitably the very biggest celebrities, the Tom Hanks, Aidan Quinn, Robert Redford, JFK Jr., were the kindest, most engaged, most focused, pleasant people. And those who were like on the lower B or C or D list were so demanding and so obnoxious. Not always, but it tended to be that the more accomplished and confident and kind of at ease a person was with their position in life, the kinder they were to other people. So if we haven't maybe accomplished that yet, how can we embrace that kind of generosity in ourselves that is there? It's inherently there.
Yeah. Well, so if I may, and I love what you just said, because it's true. I've had that experience as well. And Red Shoes Living, you know, the original concept of that was, within the organizations that I've run, you know, I created those five things. I said, let's increase our awareness, you know, of people, and look them in the eyes and say hello and thank you. And Hillary my wife and chief of staff of the company, when we travel, when we go to a restaurant, we consider anybody that's in front of us our customer. It's not the other way around. So if somebody is serving us, it's not, you need to serve us well. We serve them well. And in creating that space for people, when they finally recognize that we're, you know, decent people, they give you the best service in the world, right? They show up in the best way. And then we talk about gratitude, flexing the muscle of gratitude. And I think everybody you talked about, Mary Beth, these things probably show up. When you flex the muscle of gratitude, the world looks different. Mm-hmm. You know, you're grateful for somebody's time. You're grateful for when they fill your glass of water. You're grateful, you know, for the handwritten note, whatever the case is. And then understanding everybody has a story. So awareness says, all right, look people in the eye and understand their story today might be different than that was yesterday. So if they're treating you in a certain way that maybe isn't the way you want to be treated, there's probably a story behind it. You know, maybe they had a flat tire on the way to work or whatever the case may be. And then just being kind and respectful. It is the most superpower that you can have today. And as we travel, we practice this all the time. And it's absolutely amazing, you know, with what we do. And then putting yourself out there. You have to put yourself out there and do good, you know, and take the chance, take the shot at risk of, you know, not being perfect. And so when we take all of those things, that's the magic. That's the magic. And so that's what we talk to companies about. And Mary Beth, it's not just companies. We work every day individually with leaders, young leaders, seasoned leaders that maybe have lost sight of that, that we bring them back to it. And everyone, I would say, their life gets better because they reconnect with those basic things that connect all of us. And that's really the inception of Red Shoes Living was, what are the five things, you know, that we can put at the center of a company, center of a household that we all know that connect us all over the world. So that's where it started from. And then everything rises from there.
Yeah. If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a lovely conversation with Lonnie Main. He's the CEO, founder of Red Shoes Living. It's a philosophy and a framework for leadership, culture, and human potential. It's so funny, Lonnie, as you speak, I know that you go into lots of massive corporations, really big ones, and they're all like household names, you know, Microsoft, Nike, McDonald's, and so on. But your message is for every single one of us.
Yes.
And I hope that all of you people out there in the world, driving around in your cars and listening to our show today, will take this wonderful message. It's funny, I always think of the Recycle Center here mm-hmm. in town mm-hmm. because they blast KPCW.
They really do.
And I love that. So hello, Recycle Center. And speaking of that, there's a young man there who, well, they're all young. I call everyone a young man. I guess that's the...
They're all getting younger somehow, Lynn. I don't know how it's happening.
Just talked to him yesterday and, you know, talking about this humanness. He came to the Recycle Center and just, you know, from whatever other job he was doing. And he just said, I feel like I'm helping so much, you know, in the, you know, our community. It's so meaningful. And because of that, and because of his passion for just connecting with people, you know, it's a very social place and making, feeling like he's making that difference, you yeah. know, something like Red Shoes Living. It's really fun to see who's embodying that
right.
as you go out through your day.
Right.
Call out to Josh.
Yeah, well, I'm going to give a call out to our friend that I referred to earlier, Javi, the blind dog.
Okay.
And what's interesting about that, and you use the word meaningful, and that's a beautiful word. You know, we want to be more meaningful in the world today, you know, whether it's at home or out in the jungle, so to speak. And Javi, we go to see Javi, and we love blind dog, we love to go for the food, but we love Javi. And so we go to see Javi at least twice a week. And what's interesting is when we go, when I am undoing my chopsticks, it's a sushi place with the paper, and I put the paper on the desk, Javi makes eye contact with me and still picks up the paper and doesn't lose eye contact. When Hillary undoes her chopsticks, she likes to fold the paper, and Javi knows this. So he waits for her to fold the paper, and the minute she folds the paper, he puts his hand out and she hands it to him. And so that level of awareness meaningful awareness, you know, is incredible. I included Javi in a big corporate meeting just this week and said, hey, why don't you come in and sit in? He's been speaking with this company, you know, and about learning leadership and everything else. But I just had him sit in the meeting. And then I turned to him and said, Javi, do you have anything you want to say? He was actually on Zoom. And he jumped in and he said what you just said. He said, I just want to be helpful to people. And I did that on purpose. We call it being dangerous because we like to bring people from different organizations into these big corporate entities and say, look, we get lost in the noise of the business in corporate KPIs and growth and profitability and everything. But there are people that don't care anything about that, that show up in the world every day and they just want to help people. They want to be meaningful. And they're red shoes and Javi. So I think I shocked a lot of people. They're like, who's this guy? You know?
Our waiter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've actually had calls. I brought him into another event that I did at the University of Utah, and everybody started calling us saying, where's the restaurant? Where's Javi?
Oh.
Where's, you know? So see, I think we all want that experience from people like that. Yeah.
That's why the barista is such an important person in all of our lives. You know, if we don't always make our coffee at home.
And we don't.
Yeah.
I was thinking about something you said about your mother, that she was the same person after her series of losses that she was before. And it made me think about set points. And remember, like, I don't know, in the 80s or 90s, they were talking a lot about metabolic set points and that you do have some genetic disposition to, or lifestyle disposition to, where you're going to burn, how many calories you burn. And I was thinking about how GLP-1s kind of shifted that set point for a lot of people. They thought that they were stuck in a certain path and this is their destiny, and it's changed it. If we were to look at some of the themes in Red Shoes Living that could act as an attitudinal GLP-1 for our happiness set point, what would you think some of the strongest steps might be?
So I would say, and I love that, right off the bat, is perspective. When we lose perspective, we lose sight. And so, and GLP-1s, we have friends that take them and everything. And what's really interesting, we have a gentleman that we work with that is doing that, and his demeanor has changed dramatically. His happiness, the way he dressed,
confidence,
the way he dresses. You know, so if you consider that, what I would tie it to, Mary Beth, to your question, is mindset. They say today, and this isn't perfect science, but they say today we have about 6,000 to 7,000 unique thoughts that go through our head. About a high percent of them are negative, and a high percent of them are repetitive. So when you have that information, you can shift. So GLP-1, as an example, helps your mind shift. You go from, you know, I'm not as in good a shape as I want to be, or whatever the case may be. And once you start to get in that shape, your mindset shifts. You dress different. You show up different. So from a Red Shoes perspective, it's the same thing. It's like, change your mindset. You know, if one says, oh my gosh, it's raining again today, another person's going to say, well, I just planted flowers and I need that rain. You know, so that I would say to your question is the biggest thing. And mindset today, we are our own authors. You know, we should be our own best friends first, and then we can put all that out into the world. So if we're not our own best friends and we're at war with ourselves, then, you know, back to your question, then that changes perspective, it changes mindset, it changes everything. So you have to kind of wake up and say, you know what, look in the mirror, I'm pretty cool, right?
What a great note to end on. I'm okay. I'm pretty cool.
And doggone it, people like me.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuart Smalley.
Yes.
That's right. Lonnie Main, Red Shoes Living. Thank you so much for joining us in studio, for, you know, having eye contact with us for
being
the last
human.
25 minutes. Yes.
Thank you both very much.
It's a pleasure. And thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life here on KPCW Park City.